Right now, it's time to bring in David Tarachuk and the Media Beat. You'll find David, of course, right here on Robin Hood Radio every Friday morning. We broadcast during the weekend, during our noontime hour, and also on the weekend. David also has his own website, themediabeat.us. You'll also find him on Huffington Post, and he's a PBS television correspondent reporting on ethics and belief. And I do believe we have him with us right now. Good morning, David.
Your belief is correct. I'm reporting in now from live from the media capital of the world, New York City. Yes, good to be back with you again.
Well, we're very happy to have you back with us again. You've got a wonderful topic that I find absolutely, of course, compelling. But before we go to your topic.
Well, before you go, we go to your topic, before we go to my topic, I want to ensure that you know, I mean, contrary to whatever you may have thought previously or whatever reports you may have heard about me, that I'm a very intelligent person.
yes, but we also...
I was a very nice student. I worked very well, and I'm a very intelligent person. So can we just establish that for
we can establish that, but you really should have not had sex with all those people that we know about.
I did not have international relations with any of those people.
That's right.
The difference between the president and you and me is that I can only state... I was an average student. I had lots of friends. I only really upset two teachers in my entire life. And I did, at an early part of my life, drink heavily and take drugs, but I've survived it all, and here I am.
but you have to remember, Marshall, it is one of the hallmarks of very intelligent people that they will feel the need to tell you that they are very intelligent repeatedly and repeatedly and repeatedly. So,
but yes, they also tend to...
There's proof that I am a very intelligent person.
And probably circumstantial evidence, since some very intelligent people who are known for their very intelligence have been, shall we say, dallying inappropriately with people that they shouldn't have been. It would seem that way.
Somebody should have played after Donald Trump said that. Remember the piece John Cleese did about intelligent people and Fox? One of the funniest things I ever saw in my life where, you know...
Well, why don't you find it so that we can talk
I'll play
about
it. I'll play it. Yeah, I'll find it.
Okay, let's go do that.
Let's go to the John Cleese source, one of the best sources in the world for
human
information.
That's right. And I think it's right around his birthday, a great Scorpio. Anyway, what I would like to do before we go back to this, which...
Here it is. I've got it.
Hold on.
All right.
And
God, you're fast.
This is from... This is what Google is good for. This was from The Guardian from this morning. Quote, "We can't wait for him to die. It's unprintable what we say in private. Whenever two priests meet, they talk about how awful he is." Unquote. These are the words of a Catholic priest in England, one of the many inside the church who fume at the liberalism of Pope Francis. He has scandalized reactionaries and conservatives. It continues. Anyway, I just think that... it's a terrible segue to go from the Pope to John Cleese, but I guess we're going to do it because Marshall is...
I have to play. It's only 38.
Because he has to. He's found it.
I see certain connections there.
It's only 38.
He's infallible, John Cleese. You know that.
It's only 38 seconds long. I'm not sure, folks, if it has a swear word in it or not, but here we go.
That lot of good that's going to do someone complains.
I feel free to call the bleep button.
I don't have a bleep button, but I apologize in advance if there is. Here we go.
If you're very, very stupid, how can you possibly realize that you're very, very stupid? You'd have to be relatively intelligent to realize how stupid you are. There's a wonderful bit of research by a guy called David Dunning at Cornell, who's a friend of mine, I'm proud to say, who's pointed out that in order to know how good you are at something requires exactly the same skills as it does to be good at that thing in the first place, which means, and this is terribly funny, that if you're absolutely no good at something at all, then you lack exactly the skills that you need to know that you're absolutely no good at it.
There you go.
Oh, how very appropriate.
And it makes perfect sense. So I just throw that out for anyone who is interested in what goes on. I've developed a new affection for the term narrative.
Uh-huh.
Because, you know, for, I would say, 18 months, I have railed against it, thinking, What
I can
place?
Understand why. It's an overused term, to put it at its least. Huh?
But I've also railed against it because I keep thinking, what place does narrative, which is, I mean, to the best of my limited knowledge, and I could be a stupid person about this. no, I'm absolutely serious.
Possible, but I doubt it.
I don't know, because I have never studied. This is only – I mean, I don't know the official line on what I'm about to say. But I thought that narrative was very much a storytelling – part of a storytelling device. Or part of storytelling, and I didn't.
It's one device amongst many for storytelling, absolutely. Yeah.
And I didn't know that it had as much. I can't think of a good word in news reportage as perhaps it. I didn't think it had as much weight or heft in that. You know, I didn't think it was so much about creating a narrative, but rather saying here. Piece of information here, another piece of information here, another piece of information. We're working very hard on tying these together, but meanwhile, here had this information. Mm-hmm. So that's that was the chief reason for my railage. But that being said, I am so fascinated, and this leads to the topic that we were going to go to. I'm fascinated by what that the narrative that's being promoted and fed through various different outlets to many people, and it's I know that it's designed to sell adverts, but it's such a far cry from what's actually going on and what tripped this off. And I know you're going to talk about the missing link or the missing piece, but this is a Bloomberg a headline in a story today, which is by Timothy L. O'Brien, and he didn't write the headline, but the headline is, yes, Democrats finance research into Trump's ties to Russia. We've known that for a year.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And, but this, the big story, all we, you know, it's been there. It was in Mother Jones. It was in the New York Times. It was in Vanity Fair. It was in October of last year. And I just marvel at the way this lot's trotted out. That's all.
Sure. Well, I mean, the narrative, as it were. I'm not sure that the narrative describes. I mean, it's one of these words which doesn't quite expand to fill the role that it's being given. It's being used in journalistic circles now and political analysis circles in particular to mean a cogent, overall embracing message which takes account of everything that we know and into which new information can, you know, when it supports that same analysis, can be co-opted and included. Narrative itself need necessarily be more than just connecting a few words and ideas together to make a story that flows. I mean, it's as simple as that. What we've seen in the case of the what's being talked about here, which of course is probably the biggest story to do with the Trump administration since it came in, and indeed it started long before the Trump administration was set up. But it was clear that he was at one stage very much in the running for the Republican nomination, and then, of course, was the nominee, and then, of course, did win the election. But the biggest story throughout all that period, although, you know, it will ebb and flow in people's attention, but I'm sure that it will, in history, will show that it was the most important thing going on at the time, was the piecing together of Trump's and Trump's campaign, in particular, its connections with Russia and Russia's attempts to influence that 2016 election. Now there are actually several narratives for that, but there is something of a consensus in the media world for what it is, for what it amounts to. And as you say, this week there's been an extraordinary concentration on where that story may have started, In particular, one very important angle of it, which is a chunky bit of evidence, reliable or not, we don't entirely know. It's known as in various different places as the Trump dossier or the Steele dossier. I think I prefer to call it the Steele dossier because of the man that it originates from, Christopher Steele. He's the man who was once upon a time an MI6 operative, Britain's equivalent to the CIA. And he, of course, compiled a dossier about Trump, yes, and about Trump's connections with Russia, and in particular Russian authorities, and even more in particular than that, Russian intelligence sources, but also traces dotted lines at least to Vladimir Putin, President Putin. As you said, the big to do, as it were, this week is who started the investigation, who commissioned it from Christopher Steele or Christopher Steele's private intelligence company in London. Like a lot of retirees from MI6, he set up along with a colleague a private investigation service, basically. It was begun as a piece of oppositional research, that ugly term in American electoral politics, but it's a very real pursuit,
and
that
you
of
know,
gathering evidence on your enemy.
And do you know which Republican it was initially for?
Well, that's what I was going to say. It wasn't the Clinton campaign that did it first. They picked up the effort because it was going to be useful. But it was one of Trump's rivals in the Republican camp. And no, I don't know. It's most likely to be Jeb Bush's campaign, with a second-ranking possibility of Marco Rubio, but we don't know, and we may as well settle that. And it should come as nobody's surprise that the Clinton campaign should pick it up once it wasn't acted on in any meaningful way by whoever did commission it. And so we know, and you rightly pointed out. It has been known for some time that the Clinton campaign, of course, wanted all this information, and of course they would, wouldn't they? As I think Trump himself has been pains to say about accusations about himself and his own campaign's interest in all this murky evidence. While I think that's an interesting line of inquiry to pursue, I think it's much more valuable journalistically to actually look at the report itself, and many good efforts to do that have been affected. The whole story, of course, has been very good for journalism in some ways. We've been, as consumers of journalism, we've been treated to a very lively competitiveness between the Washington Post and the New York Times. But, of course, Mother Jones, who you mentioned, played a major role in this, and every now and again CNN has, and Vanity Fair magazine. But what I really wanted to do is just pick at some items in that very large dossier and just, take a moment. This is because, of course, it's now lumped all together, and it's got this sort of entity sense to it. The dossier is now referred to almost in a backhand way or a shorthand way or an offhand way as just something that seems to suggest something, generally speaking, rather damaging to Trump. And it's much more valuable to see, well, what actually did Christopher Steele claim to have found? What relevance might it actually have? We've got some, chunky bits of information to work on here. The fact that, there are, I forget how many pieces of paper now, but enough And what we have is a sense of really, there's an awful lot of evidence that we just need a lot more work on. First of all, to establish whether it's valuable evidence, and then examine what it is exactly that it actually indicates. And at the moment, it sits there as a call to action by journalists throughout the firmament, not just the established leaders of the pack, like the Washington Post and the New York Times. I'm looking forward to seeing a lot more dedicated work to, I'm just going to drop a couple of numbers here because I don't want to go into the details. I just want to say that, this is something for us as dedicated media watchers to look out for. Let's hope, and here's a big heavy hint to any journalists who are listening and want to get into this field, report number, because each report within the dossier, there's over 100, dossier number 80 and dossier number 111. Now, I don't want to sound like a conspiracy theorist, but I do think that if there's a conspiracy to be unearthed here, those two particular documents are going to be well worth study, and even more importantly, as I keep trying to say, will reward enormous follow-up. Follow-up is the name of this game. As every investigative journalist knows, you've got a piece of information, but what are you going to do with it? How are you going to relate it to other things? And that's where the journey starts. If you think of the Steele dossier as worth investigating at all, I think you have to take every contention in each one of the reports, not at its face value, but see what it actually means, and that requires a lot more shoe leather work. One of those qualities that we keep talking about in this segment of ours: get some good shoe leather reporting done.
And do you think I know there are some people out there who know how to do that, but I also know that there's been a sort of malaise that's.
Well, there's not much rush.
It takes time.
It does take time. And that's very few people have the time. Many people have the inclination. Fewer have the actual talents required. But the overall picture is that this whole field has gone into terrible decline in the last 10 years or maybe 20 years. One of the good things about having President Donald J. Trump in office is that it's given us a big kick. There's a lot of very good work being done now, thank goodness.
And the important aspect of this good thing is there are two. The first is there are people who have come before that you can learn from tremendously in this field, and the second is people are going to have to start advocating for a little bit of patience.
That too, absolutely, yes. This happens every time there is a big story. Newsrooms get roiled with the same internal conflict every time. And it's interesting who become the main sort of flag wavers inside the newsroom, to coin a phrase, for publication and for delay until more work gets done. There are the let's publish what we have contingent, and there will also be the well, let's not publish yet until we've got a much fuller picture. If we go off half cock, weapon analogy, you might end up doing yourself a lot more harm. So that argument goes on all the time, and it's not surprising that as with many things in the digital age, internal matters become general trends, and we have, as the public, We think we know ourselves as much as investigators do, and we try to take these arguments on amongst ourselves in a public forum. And often it's very much better just to say, "Hey, let's leave the professionals to get on with it for a while, and let's see what they genuinely come up with," rather than thirsting for a new piece of information every day.
Just remember about that dossier, and I don't know if you saw the story yesterday, but Marco Rubio was quoted as saying, "I would have used that. I would have used it." That dossier obviously was around. I think you're exactly right. I think the Republicans, I think the Bush campaign
That's already known.
So
all that does.
It's very interesting that the Bush campaign didn't use it, though.
Well, because he dropped out.
Doesn't matter.
No, it was sold to the high. I mean, if you want to draw. Hello? If you want. Just noises are coming out from odd places. If you want to speculate, because there is a good deal of closeness between the Bushes and the Clintons, it would be logical, if you're looking to, as I say, sheer speculation, you'd go, okay, we're not using this, sadly, because we've been sidelined, but...
It's there for you to use.
It's there for you to use.
Well, and even if the formal phrase wasn't used and the formal outreach wasn't made, these matters can be...
It's never
passed on one way or another. The message can be gotten out.
But
here we absolutely are in the realm of speculation.
Yeah,
as a footnote to history, at some point it might be interesting to know how it moved in its provenance. The next generation of its life that investigation was paid for and required by the Clinton campaign. How did the move happen? How did the shift happen?
Well, what's very interesting about it, and what's lost in all this, is, of course, old man Bush. Wasn't he the head of the CIA?
Yes, indeed he was.
Strange. Yeah. It's strange how the Bushes would get a hold of it. I have no idea, you know.
But that's exactly. I'm glad you're mentioning that. But that's exactly what we're talking about in terms of going back to the beginning. You know, the narrative as it's presented. It's like, no, look in this box. Do not go outside this box. This is the story in this box, and I think the entire point of this exercise is don't stay in the box necessarily. If you want to know, don't necessarily stay in the box that you're being told to stay in.
Yes, and of course, you know, we were talking about all the journalistic approaches to this, but remember that there is one very big investigation rumbling along anyway, and that is the special counsel, Mueller. And the one thing that such investigators do not do themselves, if they're doing their job properly, is stay in a box. The various different directions that we already have some strong sense of, that Mueller is tending in, and which extra directions he's been moving in, are becoming clear. And I suspect that he will not be at all narrowly focused in his report when it finally comes out. And I'm not suggesting for any moment when I say patience is a good thing here. Patience on the behalf of the consumer. I'm not suggesting for a minute that, you know, we don't try and keep up with Mueller and get a good sense of what he's doing. And also, you know, contribute, if we are investigative journalists, contribute some of our own original investigation. But overall, I think that the picture is going to emerge most authoritatively from his office and not from any journalistic effort.
Thank you very much, David Tereshchuk, The Media Beat.